here. I'm joined here with Adam Luz, Rienspecs, and I'm also joined here with Matt Pegas. Great having you guys on. And Adam, this is your first time in the show. We hung out in person in Sedona.
Yes, we did. It is an honor to be here.
I think before we get, well, Adam, you have a book, Mixtape Hyperborea. We can talk about our trip to Sedona, a number of things. I think just to kind of get an introduction, I don't know if it gets super cliche when I ask every guest about their political journey, because you don't come across, you're more on to the cultural side. You're not overtly political, but just to kind of get like a brief introduction, so I think what you said is that you were a former liberal and you were promoting your book, Mixtape Hyperborea, on a Discord, and you kind of like randomly came into this online scene. I don't even know what it's called now.
Yeah, well, I've been many things. I have been a Marxist at a time. I have been a Sam Harris centrist liberal at a time. And now where do I find myself? Now I find myself sort of apolitical, sort of, I don't really care enough
politically
about
homeless.
Politically homeless. I don't really care about, you know, these taxes and these deals and these immigration numbers. And I don't know. I'm kind of happy with whatever, but I perhaps have witnessed an act of God yesterday. Perhaps
yeah,
this was an act of God. And perhaps this is larger than politics. Perhaps we are merely playing a role in some larger cosmic plan here, gentlemen. What do you think?
I had similar thoughts, you know, like, obviously to timestamp this for people who may be listening in the future and might not know, we're talking about Donald Trump getting shot through the right ear.
Shot in the fucking head.
Shot in the head, technically, yes. And getting
just
up and
barely, just barely missed.
Yeah, and listen, I am a Trump supporter. I'm pretty open about that. I'm kind of in your similar boat, Adam, in that, like, I'm not, especially more recently, I'm not super, super political, but I've never wavered from supporting Trump. However, even I was surprised in those moments after it first happened when there was pictures of blood and we didn't exactly know how bad it was, you know, just really fearing for Trump's life. I mean, I knew that I would not want him to die, obviously, but the intensity of emotion surprised even me. And yes, ultimately, the way things shook out, it feels extremely, you know, you always talk about Talia as many.
So yeah, like I've actually been pretty critical of Trump, but just putting all that aside, like he did come across as pretty heroic just in this moment.
I don't even know.
Resilient
continue.
He was. He came right up and he put his like fist up in the air, and the Secret Service were trying to hold him back.
Yeah. Well, here's how I choose to view the situation. I feel that we must imagine for a minute that we are like Aztecs, you know, and we are living in Aztec land, you know, we're in Teotihuacan in the year whatever. And one of the leaders who wishes to become king of the Aztecs in a contested Aztec election has just been fired at with an arrow. He has just been fired at with an arrow by a rebel tribesman. And the arrow grazed our leader's ear, this potential leader of the Aztecs. And yet he was fine because he tilted his head at just the right moment to avert instant death. Would we not view this as a prophecy, as a kind of act of God, as something which, true or not, we must manifest forward? What do you think, Starkitect?
Okay, so you're saying it's so coincidental, the case as act of God. So does that mean... No, I totally agree with you, but does that mean we're sort of obligated to vote for Trump? Because I was kind of more in the boat of maybe voting for RFK Jr. So are you saying, does this make us, if Trump is vindicated by God, we're obligated to vote for Trump? I have reasons to be. I'm impressed by, I agree with you 100% about this, but I have reasons to be like skeptical about Trump on policy. But you're saying now, are you saying if Trump's vindicated by God, we have to vote for him?
I am saying if Trump is vindicated by God, we must vote for him. And even if you think that's bullshit and you're saying that's ridiculous, think of it this way. I am a fan of American history, and American history is a long and incredible story. It has many chapters, many pages. It is so clear that this chapter must end with the election of Donald Trump. It is so clear that the dramatic power behind this moment, the plot, if you will, must
Yeah,
end
no.
in the election of Donald Trump.
Yeah, these are my thoughts as well. Sorry, my phone actually overheated there for a moment. So I took thinking back to God, I was cut off mid-sentence. But you guys can hear me now?
I can hear you. Perhaps it is a sign, Matthew.
Perhaps. I don't know of what, but yeah, no, these are my, like, even though I support Trump on some policy, I agree that there's kind of an archetypal narrative. Thinking about this as I was falling asleep last night, really not even imagine, like not even talking to anyone, just thinking to myself, like if this were a movie and it didn't end in Trump being elected, you'd be like, what the fuck? Like, yeah, like it would defy narrative satisfaction logic for him not
I see what
to
you're
win.
saying. So it's not an issue of even liking Trump or agreeing with him politically, but it's about fulfilling a prophecy of the narrative, of a historical narrative, where there's this destiny where this is how things are going to go in history. And yeah, I totally get what you're saying.
Let
He
me
deserves.
lay it out even more clearly for someone who may be, you know, of course, we have many listeners. We probably have many leftist listeners because there are millions tuning in. Perhaps you are a leftist, okay, and you are listening to this. You are thinking, well, I support universal health care. I support more immigration. I support a $15 minimum wage nationally. Well, that's lovely. But perhaps we are headed for World War III. Perhaps we are headed for some kind of global apocalyptic catastrophe in which only one leader can bring us to victory. And he has been anointed with this action. Perhaps all of those other petty political things are on hold. Gentlemen, what do you think?
No, I think you're
Yeah,
really getting somewhere.
there's a power when blood is shed. You know what I mean? And even though it was only his ear that was pierced, this image of Trump with blood, and becoming this, you know, Iwo Jima level, you know, photograph, is charged in a kind of almost magical way, right? Where, yeah, you use the word anointed. It feels like there's something of destiny to this and the power of those images and what transpired.
Absolutely.
I wanted to kind of get your thoughts, like what is the scene right now? Because so like all these different scenes of all these different labels, like everything from like the dissident right to Times Square, and the labels get cringe, but I will say like things are, they feel more open now, and I think it's good that the scene of authors and the cultural stuff, like there's overall like more openness than there was five years ago, which is good, and people can kind of talk more openly. I don't know if you want to call it like the post-right. That term's kind of cringe, but it's good. I mean, it's good for creative people to have a way, creative people who are anti-establishment to have like a way to network and congregate without there being any like necessarily like political dogma.
Yes, my thoughts are formulating. Maybe Matthew would like to add something and then I'll jump in.
Yeah, no, you never know what you want to label these kinds of things. I think, yeah, as you said, Robert, things are more open now. And there's a lot, what's unfortunate, and we were talking about this a bit on our Sedona trip, and some of it's insider baseball, but I'll say it anyway. What's unfortunate is that things have gone, you know, I think there was during the pandemic, kind of origin story of like the Perfume Nationalist podcast, crossing over with Red Scare, TFW, no GF. There was a lot, and you know, Robert, we've lived through this.
I think the Dime Square, like as a brand, is become totally cringe, and people make fun of the different like clout chasers, like without naming
Right.
names, people make fun of these Dime Square figures who are like major clout chasers, and the brand has become totally cringe. But putting that
Well, I think,
aside, it did, I think some good came from it because it sort of coincided a movement of people who are anti-establishment but creative.
yeah, but creative, and you're right that Dime Square is a pretty cursed branding now. I didn't hear, I don't think I heard the word Times Square till late, maybe late 2021, and maybe not even till
Well, I
2022.
think it was kind of because we were the ones who kind of predicted, we speculated this base Whipple like phenomenon emerging back in like 2000, back in 2018, and then during 2019, the Dime Square people were, they were more like Bernie Bros in 2019, and then the whole kind
That's
of like
true. Yeah.
right wing Dime Square scene really emerged around 2021, which kind of like, I don't know, like I think it's on one hand, like it's kind of, it is kind of, they can be kind of cringe, and maybe they take themselves like, it's sort of, they take themselves too seriously, but it's also kind of like part of the satire and like hipster irony. Like they're former, like the joke is that they're kind of former hipsters who adopted like a fashy aesthetic to for the irony value. So yeah, it's kind of easy to make fun of them, but it does really relate to this idea that we called like, back in 2018, when we first met, we called like the base Whipple.
Yeah, I know it does. We were sort of ahead of the curve on that. And I think the lifespan of it, again, in 2020, which to me is kind of the real flowering of it, no one was calling it Times Square. It was a podcast scene, and it was people talking. It was people starting to talk in more Pollyann sort of ways about things, as opposed to all politics all the time. And,
So you're saying you find it a positive thing, or you think it's become cringe, or
It was absolutely a positive thing in 2020. It's not that it's become cringe, it's just that everything ends up having its Tower of Babel kind of moment. For the alt-right 1.0, this happened very publicly and visibly. Obviously with Charlottesville before it as well. And it's kind of happened to the more Pollyann Hill scene as well, where you have various people who stand, significantly differently on different issues that are kind of at each other's throats. It's not as bad as something like Charlottesville, where there was, where people's lives were actually being ruined and people were going after each other. But nevertheless, it does feel like whatever that is in the past. And to answer your original question of kind of where are we now, I think it's a bigger tent thing than ever, and it's better than ever, but it's also kind of in an in-between state. Like, there's no clear kind of leader of whatever this is. For a while, I think for a lot of people it was BAP, and I still love that, and Coast in and all that, but also that I doesn't necessarily feel like the moment anymore. Now I think you have more and more people who really are just trying to publish stuff and to commune with like-minded people, doing stuff IRL, not unlike our gentleman's trip to Sedona. I think there's more and more of that.
I
Obviously,
want to, yeah,
you do
I
that
want to
or
hear
die
from
kind of
Adam,
thing.
because Adam was more kind of like an outsider. Like he was a liberal and then more of a centrist, and he came to this very recently. So Adam, I want to hear like your first impression of all this as someone who's not super political, of the scene that you kind of stumbled across kind of randomly promoting your book.
Yes, I was honored to have my novel reviewed by the Mars Review of Books, an excellent publication, and attended an event in which this review was read. It is a lovely scene. I think it is a lovely place. I think there are many lovely people. I think there are many lovely people in every corner of this world. I feel the question in front of us is, what type of world do we want to live in? And beyond politics, I wish to live in a type of world where I may walk down the street and encounter any number of different political views, strange ideologies, weird beliefs, weird histories, crackpot ideas. I wish there to be more of this from every angle so that I can be stimulated, because I must be stimulated to the maximum degree. Robert Stark, what do you think of this? The Stark Architect, the Stark Angel.
Yeah, I like to. I agree 100%. I just don't like getting bored. Like, I'll.
Absolutely.
Yeah, like, there are all these echo chambers and, like, what is being promoted. Because, like, with Elon Musk's Twitter and now X, like, it was good from the standpoint of freedom of speech, but they're definitely. It does, like, the way the algorithms work, it promotes all these echo chambers. And I just don't want to get bored. I agree. I want to be constantly intellectually stimulated. And
Yes, but Robert
I want
Stark.
to hear something that like inspires me to write a new Substack article. I want to get like a new idea, because I don't want my writing to get stagnant either.
Yeah.
But here's the issue, Robert Stark. Having known you two now, having hung out with you in person, some of you multiple times, our hearts are open. Our hearts are full of love, full of joy. And if we were to encounter someone with left-wing beliefs, with PC beliefs, etc., I feel we would welcome them with open arms. I feel we would engage with them. We would break bread with them. But this kindness does not extend the other way, and therein lies the issue.
So yeah, reciprocity is everything. People of different political views and different all sorts of ethnic backgrounds can coexist, but there has to be some agreement based upon reciprocity.
There must be universal love in some sense.
Yeah, that's absolutely.
And do you have any sense that we could be moving toward that, or does it seem like it's getting worse?
You know what? I do have a sense we are moving towards it. And it has something to do with what we were discussing in the beginning with Trump. Okay. It feels there is a coalescence. There is a singularity, a common mission, a common path in which we are all involved. Something unitary somehow. Again, beyond politics. The Stark Angel. Andrei Starkovsky, what do you think of this?
Yeah, so you on our trip to Sedona, you were talking about like a new kind of hippie movement is what you call for that's neither left nor right, and it would solve to solve like atomization and just a lot of the hatred and division. It's interesting you bring
Yes.
that up because it is the hippies by the right. They sort of it was the hippie movement was possible because they made use of existing high levels of social cohesion that were created by a
Right.
more traditional society, but they get a lot of blame for causing a lot of the problems that we have now, such as atomization or also this kind of like mass homogenization. But I agree. I actually agree with you 100%. We do need something like that. We just sort of have to figure out what, how, where to be different, what it needs is, you can sort of simplify message people of just openness and showing love to people. But a lot of people have been saying something like that, and it hasn't really taken off. And it's different from the sort of like the kind of like right wing bohemian archetype of maybe like a Baptist who's much more Nietzschean, or as opposed to someone who is more of an elitist. It's a very different way of looking at things. But you talk about things like HBD or this kind of Nietzschean Darwinism that Bap talks about. And I think those things need to be explored. But the question is, like, does there need to be like some dualism of another value to counterbalance that? So while liberalism does not allow for certain taboos, like these taboos that say like the dissident right explores, they're good to explore, but does it need to be counterbalanced? And that's something that I've thought a lot about, but yeah, I mean, those are my thoughts. Adam, what were you getting at when you said, when we were in Sedona, you said you wanted to see like a new hippie movement and thoughts on what I said?
Yes, well, I was very much raised on the ideas, music, and movies of the 60s. Okay. I feel that the Beatles essentially defined my early artistic sensibility. Okay. And the thing about the 60s, Paglia speaks of this, is that there was, and what's forgotten now we just think of it as the images of political, retaliation. We think of protests, civil rights, women's rights. Yes, these were parts of it. But there was a greater swirl of global religious consciousness, of kind of perennial theosophical, perennialism that was supposed to
Right.
develop out of the 60s. That was never fulfilled. You
Yeah,
can
it
think of that
wasn't.
like a biblical prophecy, which has not yet been fulfilled, in which some prophet may need to fulfill this biblical
Well,
prophecy.
the thing is,
Yes.
there was the New Age movement, which came after the hippies, and that a lot of interesting things came from that, but it didn't really have that tremendous impact. And I know, like, New Age stuff gets accused of being kind of hokey or grifty. But I think it's sort of like, I think it had the potential to go somewhere, but that didn't really lead to. And we were kind of in Sedona, which is sort of a New Age site. Like we did went to this interesting bookstore with all these vintage books with a lot of thinkers that I have interest in. I actually didn't I ended up not really buying anything. Maybe I should have, but I saw Colin Wilson, Rudolf Steiner, Blavatsky books on theosophy, and a lot of that stuff is really interesting. And there is this kind of crossover, like with both right wing, some more right wing people, and more or new right, like sites, even like sites like Countercurrents. Countercurrents is kind of fashy site, and they're really into this. A lot of their articles, but then you have more hippie types who are as well, and that kind of overlap really fascinates me. And but yeah, like I think we do need like a spiritual movement is really what's needed. And I guess the question is whether it should be simplified or whether it needs some kind of like pillars of principle. But I agree with what Adam's saying.
Yes,
Like
I wish to
there is
hear,
something
yeah.
that came from the hippie movement that was not fulfilled. 'Cause I think by a lot of metrics, the whole 60s social revolution, by a lot of metrics, it actually ended up, maybe some good things came from it, but by a lot of metrics, it actually made society worse.
Yes, Matthew, do you have any thoughts? I wish to hear Matthew's thoughts on this.
Yeah, no, I very much do. As is somewhat well known, I guess now, I am pretty immersed in the new age and even occult stuff. And my thoughts on are similar to yours, Adam. I think it is this prophecy of the 60s and earlier, but made popular during the 60s, about theosophy and perennialism and the kind of multipolarity of different religions and spiritual movements. Listen, I'm not saying people shouldn't be Catholic, shouldn't be Jewish, shouldn't be Muslim, shouldn't be anything. I'm not a prophet of abandon your religion, man. But that being said, I do think the multipolarity, the multiplicity of religions and of paths to God, obviously Eastern religions are an important part of this too. It's just a fact, it's a sociological fact. Like obviously a believing Catholic, for example, will say all, they're just all misguided. I have respect for people who are of older religions. But to me, it's always struck me as like the multiplicity of this stuff is just a fact. We have to accept that there are these different paths to God, and you can have your preferences on which ones are better. But to me, I mean, again, adding caveat after caveat here, like you may just think that a lot of that billions and billions of people are wrong, that's fine. I approach it in a more open manner of no, billions of people aren't wrong. We just all have our different paths to the same thing, which is theosophical. And I think the 60s were kind of the dawning awareness of that on a mass scale. And there is, I think, this potential to kind of reform some more, I guess, more globalistic spirituality, more theosophical spirituality around that,
Yeah,
that
like I
that has not.
promote this kind of this theosophy fused with HPD, so it's this dualism where it's universalist as far as one God and salvation, but there is this idea that because that people are genetically different and they interact with God differently, that's how religions are formed. So that's like my theological outlook. It's sort of like a theosophy that's tinged with an HPD view.
Yeah, I am similar boat where I take notions of God and even things like other dimensions and spiritual realities. I take these ideas very seriously and even open to like science, almost quasi-scientific understandings of them. And I have a positive view of most, if not all, of the world's religions. And I just think, not necessarily even HPD, but that's definitely part of it. I just think these are different ways of interacting with the same thing. And I basically just take these ideas very seriously and literally. And in terms of the unfulfilled prophecies of the 60s and unfulfilled promises thereof, I think that few people really have thought this through to its conclusion in terms of genuinely being open to the idea that there are multiple paths to God, that God may really, in fact, exist, that we may really be able to interact with him. That the spiritual dimensions, different spiritual dimensions really exist. It seems like I think a lot of people think that these ideas have been explored thoroughly, but I feel like they really
I don't
haven't.
think
And it's
they haven't. I mean, I don't mean to brag, but I think what I came up with, which I plan to write an essay on, sensitive essay, is pretty groundbreaking. Other people have maybe touched on it, but I just don't see, I really don't see enough people really getting into this. But is this, so is this like the foundation of this hypothetical new hippie movement that Adam is talking about?
Well, gentlemen, may I have permission to speak personally?
Sure. Yes.
After I witnessed this remarkable historic moment yesterday, for some reason I felt I should not eat. I have not eaten since this moment. I have not eaten till right
Wow.
now,
Wow.
till the beginning of the recording of this podcast. The bravery on display, the sheer bravery has filled me with some kind of greater power that I lacked before. And gentlemen, maybe this has something to do with the methods by which this new movement will somehow be consecrated. Maybe one man must absorb cylindrical pillars, factories, vast tracts of hatred from the world. Maybe he must absorb all of this hatred. And then, in spite of that, rise above it and
Yeah.
inspire the entire planet. Perhaps he plays some strange, ironic role in the love which will follow.
Yeah.
Starchitect, what do you think of this?
Yeah, that's a really insightful remark. I once said in one of my articles, I think the idea like a Donald Trump Marianne Williamson ticket would be really interesting in the vein of political theosophy. Or even, maybe RFK should. I don't know if this happened. Maybe Trump RFK sort of
Well,
fits in
here's
with
the
that. But
thing.
I think Marianne Williamson really plays off like those are two kind of extreme archetypes that are in contrast with each other, which I think we need different archetypes in politics and in spirituality that serve different purposes.
Yeah, it's certainly either of those tickets mentioned would be things that I would be interested in. I think that the issue you run into is certainly in the case of Marianne Williamson, a lack of interest on her part in getting involved with Trump. And I know RFK has said, made jokes that like his marriage wouldn't survive if he became the running mate. But so, you have an issue of kind of audience and personal desire on the part of some of these people. To bring that into reality. That being said, I myself, and I think a lot of other Americans, would be open to such a thing because it brings together different elements, the strength and virility of a Trump with the, kind of more, in the case of Marianne Williamson, a more feminine, loving archetype. In the case of RFK, also very virile, but a little more gray tribe, trying out new ideas thing. Both could be a powerful combination, but to speak on what Adam said, I don't know, but certainly the archetype of the person who has to take on the sins of the world, as it were, it's very Christ-like. But I don't mean that in a bad way. I think that it's a very powerful, very powerful, esoterically powerful image and concept and archetype that is the kind of thing people coalesce around. Because we can talk all day on this podcast about good sort of binary defying political ideas, and we can talk all day about good, novel spiritual ideas. But what we don't have, I know, I think we all have our own kind of charisma on here, but none of us are Trump. And what you really need is that kind of figure who not only has charisma, but also, but also like the willingness to literally now bleed for his ideas. And I'm not suggesting that we need violence or anything, but this is the kind of thing that's conveyed by that picture, is this willingness to bleed for the ideas, to suffer for them, to be an object of scorn and hatred for the world. I mean, that's why people, sorry to run on sentence here, but some of the people who, even on the right, who don't like Trump because of X, Y, or Z policy failure as they see it, like what they don't realize is this is not only the way the media culture works, but the way that politics and just, society as always works, is that we really need these figureheads to coalesce around. It doesn't really matter what they say or do. They become the figurehead. And when Trump says, they don't really hate me, they hate you, they're coming after you when they prosecute me, and now when someone shoots at me, we all feel it, I think. And that's very powerful.
Adam, what is your theological view of God? You were telling me about your view as God. We're in Sedona more as this grand architect or creator who's sort of amoral, and that we all go to the same place in the afterlife, and more like a dormant Darwinian shaped theology. Where did that come from?
Yeah, well, perhaps I must ramble. Perhaps I must monologue to explain this
Please,
idea.
go
Do I
for
have
it.
permission? Thank you.
Yes.
Well, when I look at this world, what do I see? Let's discuss a few things. Number one, it is brutal and it is violent. Okay. There are animals constantly dying in horrific ways. They live their life in relative peace and then their life ends with screaming horror and bloodshed. Okay, so this is a big deal. We must really think about this, that violence and power and horror is essential to the world, number one. Okay, number two, it is beautiful. We have just come from Sedona. We have seen the most remarkable mountains, red soil, somehow blue-looking trees and
Yeah.
bushes, unbelievable sunsets. We witnessed the sun descend over the rim of the mountains after basking in a beautiful lake. Okay, so it is very beautiful. We must acknowledge beauty
So
and the
beauty
brutality.
as the higher principle, so beauty over just sort of like basic moralism.
Well, it seems to me that moralism, that we should be good people. I'm not saying we should be bad people. We should exercise love. We should help each other. When someone is down, we should help them up. That is an exercise in sort of special power, in our species exercising power. Every act of love is an act of power as well for all those
Yeah.
involved. But that it's very clear this God is sort of more concerned with his brilliant aesthetic creation than with the kind of moralizing tone I hear from many people. Matthew, what do you think of this?
Sorry, can you say the last part one more time?
Well, this God, this creator, and there must be a creator, he
Yeah.
seems to be more of an aestheticist. He seems to be more, in fact, let me qualify. Let me include
Yeah.
this historic event which has happened yesterday. Perhaps he is not only an artist, but a kind of novelist who is in fact constructing a story, a tale. Okay. And he is a
Yeah.
master of constructing this tale. If he has decided on every single atom, every single bit, every single molecule, every single, he put it all together, press play, right? He must know how it's going to come out. Maybe he is writing a grand, remarkable story with characters, with these characters, Napoleon, Julius Caesar, Donald J. Trump.
Yeah.
Perhaps there's a story being written. There's an experience to be had. It is not about right and wrong. It is about the piece of art which is being created. Matthew, what do you think of
No,
this?
no, no. I largely agree. I'm not an immoralist, certainly, and I'm not even really an amoralist. I believe there is this, I believe that a lot of morality, it comes down to that basic, species-based, helping people out sentiment. But I do think in terms of the higher, I am more of a Nietzschean, in terms of, the greatest good is also the greatest aesthetic good is also and at least in human realms, I mean, I believe nature itself is good despite its brutality, and the same goes for man. Man at his highest, has sort of sublated, or con it's not that he's necessarily brutal, but it's that he has the ability to be brutal at least, and is, kind of the great man theory of history you're kind of citing, kind of doubles as an aesthetic slash moral, interpretation of the human affairs, at least, and maybe even the whole universe, as this narrative, cusping towards these climaxes, which are affected, by man operating in his highest form. And I do see this in the great man sort of theory of history. I see it in nature. Women can be part of it too, of course, within their own kind of role and archetype. But broadly speaking, I agree. And I do think that, you can kind of separate the categories of morality and aesthetics on a quotidian level. There's things that we do just because it's the right thing. There's things we do because it's beautiful, whatever. You take morality, and then the question is how much morality is a product of either the divine or from nature, and how much of morality is just over socialization. Or then you could look at something like Neoplatonism, where like the core principles are like pantheism, the divine through nature, apotheticism, God is unknown and mysterious, and we know We know only like the tip of the iceberg of the divine. There's emanation. Everything emanates from the divine, but also returns. And what is the other one? There's a theurgy using aesthetics to create a divine experience. Those are like Neoplatonic principles.
Once getting kind of the weeds of like what is God and what are morals, I'm a little more agnostic. I'm not like a dyed-in-the-wool Neoplatonist or anything. I'm open to different ideas. What I do have is a kind of a more general sense of where I detect divinity in the universe. And to bring it back to what Adam was saying, certainly in events like yesterday and in the actions of great men, that's one of the primary places where you feel that stretch towards the divine, happening on a human level.
May I bring up another event?
Yeah.
May I monologue? Do I have permission to monologue?
Yeah, go for it.
Thank you. I witnessed another event which I feel displays these concepts we're speaking about. When we were in Sedona the final day, okay, and I write about these topics of masculine friendship, of brotherhood.
Yeah.
I witnessed this man, Robert Stark, the Starkitect, the Stark Angel, Andrei Starkovsky. I witnessed this
Are
man.
you gonna, are you going to embarrass me?
I will embarrass you, Robert Stark. Silence. You gave me permission to monologue. I witnessed this man conquer his fear of heights, descend from a mountain down to a river, descend from a height to the earth, to the water of the earth, to a stream, with the power of friendship surrounding him, the remarkable power of friendship encouraging him while he descended, conquering his fear. This was an example of both love and strong masculine power.
It was.
Starkitect, what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, that was great that I was able to get over my fear of
It
heights.
was
We were
My Little
able to have a fun.
Pony-esque, one
Yeah,
might
it
even
is my
say.
little pony. It is brony-esque. Friendship is magic, but we were able to have a great day because of
But
that.
it was not, if I may, it was not pussy shit. It was
It was
masculine
not.
power. It was
It was just,
bravery.
yeah, we're kind of joking about it here, but it was very real. And Brendan Fuso, who could not be with us on the pod today, or maybe that would have been one too many mics anyway, but we'll do another pod with him anyway. He was there, and I think was also would attest that he was very genuinely moved by the
It
whole thing. And
wasn't as bad as it looked. It looked pretty intimidating looking down that, it looked like a steep cliff waiting
yes,
for a
Robert
main.
Stark, I hear you, but isn't that always the case? It's not as bad as it looked. Is not that the
True,
case with all
true.
of our fears? So
Almost
please do not
always, yeah.
diminish the bravery. Yes.
Yeah, to give, I guess, the listeners some context, we were rejected from Sliding Rock State Park in Sedona because they only let cars in, no foot traffic, ridiculously enough.
The
And there was about an
Democratic Party
hour.
rejected us.
Yeah. The bureaucracy, the state bureaucracy. There was like an hour and a half line of cars. We weren't getting in. We walked a long way only to be turned away. And we were naturally, as one does, we were trying to find a way in, legally or not. But just to find any way in to enjoy this magnificent, water feature canyon park in Sedona. And we were. I was beginning to lose hope when we found this kind of way in off the road that I'll always remember if and when I ever go back to Sedona. It involved a little bit of a steep incline, although as Robert said, it wasn't as bad as it looked. And we had to kind of scramble down that. But then at the bottom was this just excellent, excellent water hole. And then we proceeded to walk like 3 miles back to the front of the park, and it really just was a top-notch experience in State
It's
Park.
ranked one of the as like one of the best water holes in the country. It was
Yeah.
spectacular.
It is also ranked as one of the most glorious moments I've witnessed.
Same.
Thank you.
And our journey through the lake. Remarkable.
Yeah, everything about it was really there was a perfection and an order. It's what like a little bit what you were saying with this Trump thing. It's there's these most let's be honest. I mean, at least for me, much of life is spent like a little bit twiddling my thumbs, right? Like it's just day in, day out. You get little bits of meaning and joy, but it's, I'm not usually overwhelmed with a sense of meaning and joy like that. I mean, I'm a happy enough person that I feel that on a weekly basis. These moments happen weekly and sometimes even daily. Everything's good, but you do have to kind of fight for them. And everything about that weekend kind of felt preordained. Like that was how it was supposed to happen. And we made our way down, and everything worked out. Kind of, it's a weird to compare it to the Trump thing, but that too, it's like how, he moved his head at just the right time. This picture was produced by it, and now he's going to win the presidency. It's this moment where everything seems to line up.
Adam,
It's just,
you
yeah.
attended a Steiner school growing up. Do you have thoughts on the success of the Waldorf Steiner school model of education, but also kind of like how there was a push to cancel Steiner? And have you studied his thoughts on theology and philosophy?
Yes. If you are listening to this and you are going to have children, okay, perhaps you have children, perhaps you are going to have them. Please turn off the podcast. Please go to Google Maps and please find where the nearest Waldorf school is to your location. Put your children in a Waldorf school rather than doing homework and worksheets and playing on iPads like idiots. They will be traversing natural landscapes. They will be counting leaves. Okay, they will be drawing, hearing pictures of the saints and illustrating them. They will be making candles and feeding chickens. When they turn 7, they will be anointed on their birthday with a sword. Put your children in a Waldorf school. Does that answer your question, Robert Stark?
Yeah. From what I heard, they've had an immense track record of success.
I just Googled it. I just did what Adam was saying to do and found that there's one near me, so. Good to
Let me
know.
check.
Balboa, Lake Balboa, Waldorf
Oh,
School, yeah,
wow.
and Matt, you are a very fertile man, so it is good that you know
It
that.
is true. Yeah, I gotta figure these things out.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah, there's one in my area too. They're extensive, remarkable just how many there are. Do you
Yeah,
have
because
thoughts
I'll.
on Steiner's idea? I don't know if you listened to it, but I recorded a show with Keith Preston on Steiner's political ideas and theology.
I must listen. I'm not an expert on Steiner. But here's the thing, why it's interesting. I've experienced Steiner more so than I've understood him because I went to a Waldorf school as a young child. I did not understand all of the theories. I did not understand, the four types of people, the ascension of the soul. I did not understand all of the details, but I lived it. I lived the curriculum that he created. And the memories for me and my sister, who also attended a Waldorf school, are so intense. They're so mythical, our youth, when we think about it, that I feel I don't even need to understand the theories. Maybe I should look into them, but I feel the gift has already been given in a way. And the incredible thing about Waldorf schools, even if you don't buy into any of the mumbo jumbo about the spirit descending when a child turns 9 years old, or about, again, the phlegmatic personalities or something like that, even if you disregard all of this, your children will be in a classroom with zero technology. There will not even be plastics in the classroom. They only allow wood and metal. Okay. They're tremendously beautiful schools. Boys are allowed to play rough. They're allowed to wrestle. Okay. Wrestle in the dirt. Greek wrestling. This is reason enough, I believe.
I would agree.
I think,
There's
Matt,
a
you were
lot
the
of,
ones promoting a Baptist version of Steiner schools.
I threw that out there as a thought experiment.
Was that in the Black Album?
It is in the Black Album. It's in an extended version of my David Lynch essay. I don't remember why it factors into that, but it's in there. It's kind of a thought experiment, but I think a very good thought experiment. I think a BAP school, as retarded as that might sound to some, would ultimately be similar to what Adam's describing in the Steiner School. It's not that it wouldn't be some cursed Jack Murphy alpha male boot camp. It just would be boys simply allowing to be boys, allowing to wrestle, etc. And also with a more perennial, less education. I mean, it's all there in BAP. BAP is a Steiner-esque figure in many, many ways.
Well,
But
Steiner
I think
like
it's a good idea.
pioneered. Well, what Steiner got canceled for is his view about the whole like kind of spiritual races is what he's controversial for. But he really pioneered like spiritual science, the idea that science th that rejecting the whole what is the com well the conference that separates religion and science, forget the name of that the famous conference in history, but the idea that science and spirituality are fundamentally interlinked.
I mean, he would do away with that, and he would recall to mind the link between science and religion. I'm definitely on the same page about that, which ties in kind of what you were ta we were talking about earlier with how
But
there,
we
there's a
had
promise.
actual, we had experience with spiritual, actual spiritual science in trying shrooms.
This is
Absolutely.
true. Yeah, let me just finish the thought. You know, I think people think, to kind of paraphrase something I said earlier, people think that the overlap between science and religion, people think, oh, that's well understood. We know that there's parts of the brain that are activated during experiences of God. And, you know, these are just separate spheres. You need the leap of faith. And some of that's true with regard to religion. I mean, you are going to make a leap of faith with certain traditions. But I just think that rather than being this thoroughly explored thing, the real unity of human knowledge, of, understanding both religion and science, I think we've barely scratched the surface of that. And I think that's, what that
I
would look like
think
is
it's
actually
not,
really taking this seriously.
it's
And I think it's
beneficial to
because,
both. I think it's beneficial. It would be beneficial also to scientific innovation as well, not
it
just to
would. I think there's,
spirituality.
and I think the reason for this, my theory is, I think there's a lack of interest.
And
I
there
think
has
that people
been, like,
who,
during the Cold War, the CIA did a lot of research into parapsychology and
they sure did,
legitimate, like, findings. But for some
yeah. I
reason,
think.
well, it was quasi-secretive, but it has been, like, the sciences have been very dismissive of parapsychology, which is a huge shame.
It is. I think religious people don't really care about the scientific element, and I think scientific people don't really care about the religious element, but both are there for those who are intrepid enough to venture in. And someone like Steiner is a good example. Last sound bite I want to get in, and then we can talk about shrooms. And then the other thing, hopefully I'm not monopolizing the mic here. Robert, because you brought it up in terms of Steiner schools and BAP schools, I would say, and maybe this is just reiterating something that's already been said, but there's this notion that, like, people like Rufo, who are against woke stuff and critical race theory, like, what are you replacing it with? That's an open question that a lot of people
Because the
have, and
thing is, like, a lot of
I don't
those
think it's
figures,
jingoism. I think it's stuff
yeah,
like
they
Steiner.
just complain. Like someone like Chris Rufo, I don't, he seems to just complain about wokeness, but he doesn't propose anything that's, like, inspirational. And that's true of a lot of, like, figure conservatives.
Definitely. But Robert,
Should
sorry, did you want to bring
we
up
go
the
ahead and talk about
yeah.
shrooms?
No, I thought we should. That's why I jumped in there to get my
Yeah,
last
yeah.
soundbite thing, because I knew the shrooms thing would take its own
So, okay, so the
course.
first night we were all together in Sedona, and I don't even know if it counts as microdosing. I tried a pretty small amount, and we took that walk down to the creek, but nothing really that significant happened. Just everything seemed to be kind of warm and fuzzy and have this glow to it. And then looking back, it feels a bit like a movie sequence, but it was a pretty small dose. And that was the first night in Sedona. And then the second night, when we were outside at night, then I that was I mean that was a pretty the, I'd say
Wait,
the big
sorry.
experience. Yeah, the second night, I mean, that was the more intense experience. I don't know how much I had. Adam might know, maybe.
Yeah, if I could hazard a guess, Starkitect, I believe maybe you took like 1.5 or 1.7 grams the first night, maybe 2, and the second night I believe you took closer to 2.5, maybe 3 grams,
Oh, that's significantly more.
which is more and is kind of past the threshold of what counts as like tripping, I would argue.
And I think 5 is a heroic dose. No, I was nowhere near
Yes.
that. I don't even
No.
know if I want to. I was
You
nervous.
do.
I was
You do.
nervous.
We
I
will
was
ascend to
really
those heights.
apprehensive about trying it initially.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'll say this again, because a theme of that weekend and maybe even the theme of this podcast to an extent has been, for me at least, I don't know, these things that feel preordained, right? And I specifically said to Stark, like, look, I'm talking to Adam, might want to try shrooms. I was like, I don't recommend it for you. You know, you have X, Y, and Z history. Like, it's not recommended for people, blah, 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 who with certain types of anxieties. But then when we got there and started talking to Adam about it, it just became very clear that Stark was going to take some, like, whether I wanted him to or not. You know? And that, but also, like, I did, I immediately was like, no, he should. And listen, I enjoyed my experience. It was
I
my
think
first
I took
experience with him
more
as
than
well.
you,
I think, yeah, you certainly had a
because
stronger reaction and yeah.
you were with Adam and you were, like, playing different music and you were painting together. I was just kind of,
Yeah.
like, lying on my back staring at the stars, just totally kind of, like, zonked out in a trance. It was, yeah, I mean, it
You're right.
was like this immense feeling of euphoria this kind of oneness with the universe, or you could say God, looking at stuff like the meaning to object, the meaning to like the palm tree, or to like that Greco-Roman statue. Like I had this very vivid, everything was vivid. I closed my eyes and see these really beautiful, like colorful patterns. I
Right.
most significantly was like this immense sense of euphoria, and it reminds me a bit, yeah, like a bit of like my June Lake mystical experience, which I've talked about some of the similar feelings to that, but I feel like that maybe felt a bit purer. But it was still regard it was still pretty intense. Like there is something spiritual about it, and it's interesting. Like, what is the spiritual interpretation? Are you uncovering lost spiritual memories? Are you opening up spiritual receptors? Are you perhaps entering some other dimension? That angle to it is really interesting too.
Yes, may I hypothesize? Do I have permission
Sure.
to hypothesize?
Yeah.
Thank you. Well, here's the best way I can explain it, because I have tried for a very long time to try to explain what the feeling is on shrooms. And there were many times, even during the trip, both days, when I'd speak to one of you and I would say, it's impossible to describe. I'm trying to describe what this is, but it's
Yeah,
impossible to
I'm not.
verbalize or
I'm yeah,
something.
I agree with you 100%. I'm giving a brief description. Like I wrote a short article about it, but really words can't describe it. You're right.
But I wish to describe it. I have a theory. I wish to describe it. I believe, for example, we were speaking of Trump earlier in this recording. I believe that when Trump woke up this morning, what is today, the 12th of June, of July?
The
Is it the
fourteenth of
14th?
July.
But yeah.
Yeah.
It is the 14th. I'm sorry. It is the 14th of July. I believe when Trump woke up today on the 14th of July, I believe his morning McDonald's hamburger tasted more delicious and more delectable than any hamburger he's ever had before. I believe his hair, when he ran his fingers through his beautiful golden hair, I believe it felt more fine and aristocratic than his hair had ever felt before. I believe when he made love to Melania, it was more powerful and erotic than any time he had ever made love to her before. And this is because I believe for Trump this morning, perhaps the world was new. The world was as if he had been born in a way, but with adult intelligence. And gentlemen, I think this has something to do with the feeling and the sensation of mushrooms. I believe that what these things can do is sort of re-put us in the world as if we are experiencing it for the first time, as if we're babies or aliens. Because we're here so much, we see so much of the world. Maybe we see so much, we've become blind. We've become used to it. And the shrooms, the mushrooms, maybe recalibrate us so that the intensity of
Well, yeah, like I'm
nature.
saying, looking back at the sequence, it feels like a movie sequence. Like everything in life feels like it lacks meaning. It feels like a blur. It does give more meaning. But one more thing I'll say about it is I had a sense, I maintained a sense of clarity, actually. It's a very different feeling from marijuana where your brain's really fuzzy. I actually did maintain some sense of mental clarity, which actually I wasn't expecting.
Well, yes, I agree absolutely. I think that is the thing, is that we're sort of seeing more clearly. I'm looking outside right
Yeah.
now and I'm seeing plants, I'm seeing trees, and they don't do much for me. They're
I
plants and they're
saw,
trees.
I don't know, there's a palm tree in the yard we were in, and it just
Yes.
looks so full of life
You're
and intense.
speaking of the palm tree on the estate that I own. This is correct?
Yes, it was like mo was
Yes.
moving, it felt alive, and I guess technically it is alive, but it was so
Yeah.
vivid, and it was like dance, all like dancing and moving in
Well,
the
Robert
wind.
Stark, you just said it. I feel you just said it. You just said, well, of course, obviously it is alive. But that's what I mean. We see these trees, these plants, whatever, they're trees or plants. I genuinely felt during that second night, like the plants were like guys, and they were looking at me and they were being like, how you doing, dude? We're both guys. We are both beings. I have just as much of a being as you. We were communicating. We were in the same realm. It's the kind of thing, I explain it, it sounds silly, it sounds whatever. But when you feel it, it changes the way you feel about nature. It changes the way you relate to the world, to your own being. Matthew, what do you think of this?
Well, okay, so I mean, I don't think I had as strong of an experience as either of you, but I think I saw just enough to begin to see how that kind of thing could start, and I do want to take more in the future. But one thing
We will.
and another way of saying that, and people had told me ahead of time. So my backstory with psychedelics and drugs in general is that I still do it from time to time. I don't know why. I think at this point it's like some mental fortitude thing slash I also really, really like the way it makes music sound. But I basically have had very bad experiences with pot. And even now, even though I'm used to it, like it just makes me anxious. So I was very worried that psychedelics would be similar to that. And I'm sure they could be in the wrong setting. But I had a very, very, very positive take, like almost the opposite of anxiety. I felt more lucid and good. The most anxious part of the trip was the moment, like the not even
When
part
you
of the trip,
first
but
eat it.
when he first, yeah, when I was worried what could happen. But once it actually started hitting in, that all of the anxiety was alleviated. So it was a positive experience. And yeah, I can't quite speak on the deep level that you guys are talking about the way it made you feel. But I have my own experience with meditation and my own, I've been in spiritual states before and I felt similar things. And I believe I've taken just enough shrooms now to know that it is benevolent and to know that it can lead me in that direction. And that's mostly all I can comment on. But
To clarify
experiencing
from experience, like you other people have different experiences. I guess
right. They
people do
subjective.
have bad trips and shrooms.
Yeah, case
Yes,
and
in
I
point. I mean, yeah, go on.
well I wish to add for the listener, Matthew made a painting. He made a painting, his second painting of the night. Matthew, please do not laugh. This was a remarkable painting. He painted what I could he painted something which could perhaps be a wine glass or a flower. And even just that it was revealed. It almost was like he didn't mean to paint that thing. He was clearly fucking around. It was revealed. It revealed, even that revealed something to me, revealed some strange connection between our manufactured objects and the natural things which we get our inspiration from to then create those artificial, unnatural objects.
You
Maybe,
know,
or
I
something.
hadn't even thought of that, but I think you're probably right. Like at some point, some aesthetic, he was probably French, maybe Italian, if I had to guess. Someone made a wine glass that looked like that the first time, right? And why did they do it? Probably because it looks like a flower. And even though I
Yes.
made that painting, it didn't occur to me at this moment that there is that interesting connectivity. But to change the topic only slightly, or really to keep on it for a different angle. The painting was an interesting thing in and of itself. I mean, that is one really. And anyone who's asked me about shrooms since this occurred, I've said this. They made me very playful. Like there's kind of like this merry prankster image surrounding psychedelics. I never really got that until taking them,
You feel
and it
ground.
made
I'd say
me.
I felt more grounded. Like I'm neurotic and I'm more like in my mind and in the air. And I felt come. I usually don't like sitting down on grass, but I felt just totally okay just lying in the grass and just feeling like the dirt and the kind of
Yeah, I mean
sinking.
that's where the heavily subjective nature of these things come in, but I definitely had an urge to create is what I'm trying to say. I was playing I don't play guitar, but I was kind of strumming along and just enjoying that process. And then later in the night when I mean we were coming down by that point, but I really like the
Just
painting just felt. I mean some of it was just aesthetics, right?
Brian is Beautiful by Memo Boy.
Yeah, we were listening to this great song. We love many great songs, including that one. And maybe Robert, you go ahead and use that as the intro music if you want, because it was kind of the song of the trip. But yeah, just that's just something that really stood out. Like some of it was aesthetic. Adam, you kind of we really decorated things for our experience. We had like a blanket down and various objects, including a
That
guitar and
the
paint.
statue was really vivid for some reason in the lit
Yeah,
up in the night,
Romanesque statue.
kind
All of
of
it was there,
vaporwave,
but
yeah.
yeah, I really did just feel this urge to create, which I think was definitely partly the drugs, but also partly just
Well,
made.
Stark, may I add just one more thing on this topic, and
Sure,
then
go
we move
ahead.
on? I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I think what Matthew said was very poignant. And I think it is an interesting thing that there is both a way in which the substance seems to amplify the truest parts of you, seems to amplify the parts of you which are maybe most wholesome and real and good and true, like your love of your family or your desire to be healthy or your creative impulses, but also that it amplifies some inferior function in you. That maybe if you, as you were saying, Stark, are someone who doesn't like the dirty touch of grass against your skin, you know, or maybe is very verbal, right? That on shrooms, you may all of a sudden feel a lot of pleasure from the touch of grass against your skin. And like I can say myself, I become very nonverbal. Sentences and speaking and all these, it starts to become very challenging for me at high enough doses. Maybe because I'm so annoyingly verbal, annoyingly Jewishly verbal constantly that it amplifies some inferior part of me.
So interesting contradiction. Shrooms turn you into a goy.
Perhaps they goy me.
That's an interesting angle to the whole, like, spiritual science HBD.
Maybe on enough of a dose, I will even become an Aryan. Who can say?
I'm sure our friend, not my friend, but someone Robert knows, James O'Mara, who's kind of a psychedelic countercurrents guy, would be interested in this line of inquiry. But no, I mean, again, I think a higher dose for me would bring out that more inferior, inferior, sorry, what's the term? Inferior function?
I believe inferior function. Yeah.
Yeah. And I heard that in the you sent a great podcast, some Jungians talking about psychedelics, which was very interesting. And they mentioned that, but I think higher dose would bring out some of those more revelatory kind of personality shifting elements for me. But, I mean, I've really said my piece on shrooms about this at this point, but yeah, that was, I contrast it with pot, which I've always had a, you know, struggled in my relationship with in terms of the way it makes me feel. But yeah, much more lucid than that. And rather than pot, which kind of weighs you down. For me, weed, like,
because like with
it has
pot,
psychedelic elements, but it weighs you down.
Pot makes your like, if you're neurotic, pot can actually make your thinking a lot worse. Like you still have like the OCD type thinking, but your brain's really scattered. Like it can be euphoric at times, but I'm less of a fan of it.
I agree. Exactly. The opposite effect, if you wish to induce the opposite effect. Witness the president surviving an assassination attempt and do not eat for more than 24 hours. You will feel a sharpness that is almost diamond tipped.
Yeah, I believe it.
The same feeling, or swimming in like ice water, that kind of feeling.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but there's a sharp, I guess what I'm trying to say, there's a sharpness to the shrooms too that I was not expecting.
Yeah.
I felt sharper. I felt smarter, frankly.
Mm.
Adam, you have a book that I think came out a few years ago, Mixtape Hyperborea. It's a coming-of-age genre. So I've just read it. It's also a pretty funny book. And there's a lot of interesting things about it. So you're a Zoomer, but you wrote about millennials who graduated in 2008. So it takes place over as high school seniors. How much of it is autobiographical?
Well, that's a bit of a mystery. You know, I feel I shouldn't say exactly too specifically how much of it is autobiographical. When I've done interviews on this book in the past, I would say that I feel that I maybe communicated like it was, like there was something special about the way I was making it biographical, but I feel now all writers make everything autobiographical. And is this any more autobiographical truly than what other writers write? I don't know. Is this more autobiographical than both of your novels that I've read? I'm not sure.
What's interesting is you have a soundtrack for each chapter. So you have a lot of different songs from Eminem's Stan to like a John Mouse song and a lot of like kind of early indie music. And just a lot, I'd say a pretty good variety of music. It's not one specific genre, but I guess you could almost say like you feel by offering a soundtrack, you feel like, well, it's a window to the author's soul, which may sound a bit cliche, but I think it's true. But the other angle to it is it makes the book actually feel more like a movie. Cause I was kind of rushing through it because I wanted to finish it in time for the show. So I didn't get the full experience, but I did it with maybe, we also have some classical music. I think you have Mozart as well, but I did it with maybe several of the songs and it does really create the vibes that like you experience it as a movie.
Well, I appreciate that. That was the intended effect.
And the other interesting thing is it's a multiracial friend group, but it makes me kind of think of like the post-racial era that maybe we sort of had in the Zero Zeros, but the thing is they're very close and they're very politically incorrect and they joke around with each other and they make fun of each other's ethnic backgrounds in a very politically incorrect way, but that also strengthens their friendships. It makes them more open with each other.
Yes, I feel very strongly about this. I feel that, in a sense, playful cruelty and meanness and inappropriateness and borderline harassment between people who love and care about each other
Do you think
is
friends who are of different backgrounds should be able to call each other racial slurs?
Oh, I absolutely believe that. In fact, I think it is one of the only true signs of the bond between them. And I hope you two gentlemen feel at this point that both my Jewish and my Eastern European Slavic heritage is fair game due to our friendship.
Well noted.
I was going to say, like, I'm a little bit Jewish, so maybe I'm allowed to say certain things that Matt's not.
You have a K
And
pass
Matt is
there.
dating a Jewish woman,
So
which
we both
correct.
have the K.
Yes.
I'm not even going to say the word on air, but we both have the K pass.
Robert Stark,
It's
say
not
it. I dare you.
honestly,
Wait, Robert
yeah.
Stark, I dare you. Say it. Say it now.
I'll edit it out. I'll say it and I'll edit it out. Okay, and Matt was
Excellent.
editing it out, so
Yeah,
God
excellent.
didn't hear it.
What a
I was going
beautiful
to say
sound to my ears.
for reasons that don't really have to do with philo-Semitism, it's not my favorite slur. It never had the right ring to me. It's like a, I don't know, like I
You
very rarely
joked
hear
that
people
you
use it like
had the
that.
pass for the an end pass,
The
but I
N-word
don't think
pass, yeah.
that doesn't, I don't think that flies actually in the way
Probably
that.
being inadvisable.
I don't think so. I don't think I've earned it yet. Perhaps one day.
But you have that in the same way that Elon Musk does.
Oh yes. Well, yes, perhaps we'll leave that ambiguous, but you're correct on that, Stark Attacked.
Another
Yeah,
thing
or
that's
you
interesting
can
about that thing that's interesting about the book is kind of like how high school social hierarchies are formed, especially male, and how they have long lasting effects into adulthood. And then there's also that's really interesting. Then there's also this sort of like masculinity with spirituality component that reminds me a bit of BAP. But I think those two angles are really interesting. The masculinity and how it relates to spirituality, and then also like how social hierarchies are formed early on.
Well, you know, I feel this, Matt is correct. There is a theme emerging. You know, I feel this concept of sort of spiritual masculinity, you know, in the bravery, Robert, that I've seen you exhibit and the bravery I've seen from Donald J. Trump, 45th president of the United States of America. Yes, there is a spiritual masculinity. There's something spiritual. I feel we all felt it yesterday. We felt not excitement. Okay. We didn't feel excitement like, oh wow, a new movie is out or something. I'm getting a new car. We felt almost elevated. We felt our souls lifted by the bravery that we saw, right? Yes, so I feel
It was spiritual, actually.
it was. It was absolutely. Yeah.
A
Yeah.
theme in Mixtape is the undercurrent of a specifically masculine vitalism that is
Yeah,
spiritual.
vitalism, like even like when he goes on that field trip in the last, like towards the end, and he talks about how going in the water and going in the cold ocean and how it feels and not wanting to like clean the salt water off of him because it has some kind of like spiritual significance.
Yeah, certainly. Certainly the ocean. Certainly something about, and we've all recently experienced this, certainly something about water, about the rushing of water,
Like my
about the
June Lake, like
absorption.
my June Lake spiritual experience happened while I was swimming in alpine water, cold alpine water.
Yeah, and we found ourselves, gentlemen, both days going towards water. Both days we found ourselves constantly drawn towards water,
It has
right?
this sacred significance.
Yeah,
Yes, and yes, Matthew.
Adam, before we really started recording, you were asking, how our day after the second shroom trip, the day Robert and I flew back to Los Angeles, was, short answer, it was rough, because we only got a few hours of sleep. And standing in line for, you know, you said this thing about the Phoenix airport. Well, actually, I don't want to say that you
no,
have
go
any
for
more
it.
familiarity, but you know, I'd heard that the Phoenix airport was good and that you kind of got in and out, and that was largely true. And I like the airport, but I've never been so badgered.
Unlike
LAX,
like...
I've never seen such a trigger happy security line. Like, they had like every third bag, and one of which included mine, they pulled aside to inspect further. I'm not sure if we just had.
Do you think
bad
it was
people.
Because? Well, I was. I didn't have any problems, and I'm probably somewhat more controversial. Do you think it was political, or do you think it was just random?
No, do you know what I think it was? I think in addition to them being clearly trigger happy and looking at a ton of different bags, I think that I had a pretty big Philly Bear Toes burrito in my bag that Adam had very kindly Uber Eats for Robert and I the night before, and I think they were put off by the consistency of the beans. But anyway, all that, maybe it's an irrelevant story. Largely positive review of the Phoenix airport. But I'm on 3 hours of sleep after shrooms and a great but long weekend. Definitely felt a little aggravated at that point. Tried to catch some Z's on the flight. Didn't really succeed. I was pretty zonked by the time we got back to Los Angeles. So we did nap for a few hours, and I felt a little better after that. But I was very tired, in short. But this circles back to the water thing, because what Robert and I did was we went to the beach near his house in Santa Barbara, and I felt quite rejuvenated by the ocean. So we were continually drawn back to the water throughout the entire weekend, even after it ended. Just to go back to the book a little bit, Mixtape Hyperborea is told from the perspective, and you know, you're talking about what is and isn't autobiographical. I feel pretty good about saying that this is not autobiographical in terms of what happened, but that this narrator is you, Adam. And I only mean this in the best way. And you can disavow, but I don't know why you'd want to. You know, this is a narrator who is very, very in tune with the spiritual undercurrent underlying things. And really the whole book, the book about a high
school
senior coming of age, but really what it's about is this guy observing the world. And I feel like that's what the book was. And I feel like that's what you'll continue to write.
I also noticed that with the humor too, like the really kind of off the wall humor. So like he goes to like an open mic nightclub and does some random racist like stand-up comedy, but then like everyone in the audience like loved it.
Yes,
or
yes.
Half
they,
the audience
well, they
loved
witness.
It,
they
left.
Witness some people do stand-up comedy. Yeah,
but a lot of like really like off the wall comedy, like
yeah,
I don't
no,
think
I,
he has to like get out of class and rush to the bathroom to like. To relieve himself.
Yeah, you're talking about the hand raiser chapter where Joshua
yeah.
escapes to the bathroom. Yes. Yeah.
I
no,
wanted
I
to
appreciate
ask you
it,
also
so.
The
yeah,
question,
yeah, no.
Your thoughts on how like social hierarchies are formed and the role that like how social hierarchies are formed, especially like the role that high school plays and especially like male social hierarchies.
That's an excellent point, Robert. I would love to comment on this. I would love to hear both of your thoughts about it once I'm concluded. I think that more and more, okay, even though it doesn't map onto my day-to-day experience, doesn't map onto how I feel day-to-day. I do think more and more that our actions, where we end up, our lives, our behaviors, they are not a result of our conscious choices. They're not a result of analytical thinking. They're not a result really of free will. I think much of this may be a result of incommunicable, pheromone-based, visual, spiritual signals, okay, that fire on subconscious levels. And I feel that with men, with hierarchies, though it's seen as kind of a bad thing, though it's seen as maybe domineering or, I don't know, like
That's,
exploitative,
yeah, I think
it is an excellent thing that men naturally, without thought, with only instinct, I think align themselves into hierarchies constantly. Okay. And I would say on this vacation, if I may speak honestly, I think all of us recognize that Brendan, because he was sober, because he was not ingesting any substances, right? I was the youngest. I was the one hawking drugs at everybody because Brendan was a little bit older, not taking any drugs, sound of mind, that we should adhere to his authority, that perhaps he naturally should have some place at the top of the hierarchy. We never spoke of this. We never said anything. Okay. This did not need to be communicated. I don't even think we had a choice in it. I think we all intuitively felt, especially when we were taking the substances, that his word was law, that if he said, time to go, time to get out of here, we would all agree. What do you think, John? Yeah.
There's a reason that he's called Big Dog, I think.
He is Big Dog. And by the way, this is a beautiful thing. This is how ants build towers. This is how bees build hives. It is magical.
I think the other thing that's interesting about your book is, well, high schools can be very positive and kind of like a tribal village, but they can also, if you have bad experiences in high school, it can be more like a prison. But I think the positive side of it is that there's these more like, it's like a return to village life where things sort of just happen organically. The problem with like adult life is everything becomes entirely transactional. So I think like back to your like new hippie movement, I think one key principle of that should be like how to kind of recreate that for all of society.
Robert, it means the world to me that you recognize that, because I felt that was a strong emotional undertone of the book. And I spoke of this previously on the excellent New Right podcast with Matthew as well.
I listened to that. So I'm repeating that for that podcast, well, but I think it's really insightful. And I think it should be like something, if there is some kind of new movement to try to, that seeks to transform society, that's really something, because that should be the case for adults. It's really sad that adults have to live this way where everything is transactional.
That's an excellent point, Robert. You know, I think even what would be a beautiful thing is perhaps the amount of work which must be done must be hemmed in slightly. And then we create sort of adult education centers, okay, where adults have a certain amount of maybe credits, or maybe it's an hour a day, maybe it's 2 hours, where they go somewhere based on their zip code, their locality, their enclave, if you will, a word which I know Robert Stark is familiar, and they attend a sort of adult school where they can meet people their age, discuss literature, make paintings.
Sort of city college.
Yes, we have these community colleges, but they're seen as like trade schools. They're seen as purely practical. They're seen as a little bit low class even and sort of shameful. And this should be an almost requirement, okay, of adult American life, that you attend these adult schools, okay, in a cohort very similar, an age cohort similar to high school.
If I do decide to run for governor of California, no idea if I will, I'll run on that.
I appreciate it.
No, I think it's a great idea. It's kind of like a Steiner school for adults. And I mean, I think there's probably equivalents, but in a better society than ours, because in the current form of our society, in the current form of our government and state governments, I'm not sure if I'd really trust them to not make these basically woke re-education centers. But in a better society, this would be the perfect example of something that could be state funded. And just add that flavor, because I think we talked about this on New Right. You know, less in high school, I miss college, and what I miss about college is the ability to learn. And
Matt,
the
did you read the article I wrote?
Could be college as well.
Yeah, right? Read the article College Town Urbanism?
Way back when, of course. Yeah.
So I think like it's sort of like conservatives talk about like replacing college. But the things that people really, really like about college, like bringing them more into society at large, and like the kind of the urban layout is part of that, like college town urbanism too.
Definitely in terms of college towns, and then like the campus life. I went to, no secret, I went to Cornell at this point. Like
when we were back in Sedona, I think that village area we were the very last day is a good example. Even though it was kind of a tourist trap, but a good example of that kind of model, whereas a village area that was all pedestrian, and like we need a lot more stuff like that.
Well, and I would add an element of this.
What
I
is that
would.
called? The art something art village? It sounds kind of
Yes, that was Tlacopaque, the arts
Tlacopaque. It sounds
village.
kind of Aztec.
Perhaps it is. I would say a part of this concept we're talking about, this maybe adult collegiate education continuing, in some way must include, what is the word? Entrapment. Okay. There's something magical with friendship when two people are forced to be somewhere. Okay. When two people are required to endure something together, when they have to take a driving class together, when they have to serve in the military together, when they are not intentionally trying to have fun or enjoy themselves, there's a greater sort of intimacy to being in the back of the classroom, being forced to be in the back of the classroom. Okay. That is essential, I think, to true friendship. What do you think of this?
Yeah, I see that. That's why, like, some people, like, I know, like, Professor Scott Galloway is this figure who wants, like, a return to national service. And maybe it seems very boomer, like a boomer thing to propose. But it's interesting because, kind of, like, which direction should we go in? Because, like, there's pan enclavism, which I talk a lot about, is people building communities of like-minded people or people who are similar demographically. And then the other extreme is fostering ways of having people of like national service where people you form social cohesion and social bonds across all of society, and people who are of different backgrounds are required to maybe spend time together and get to know each other and understand each other. And this seems schizo, but maybe in the principle of dualism, maybe we kind of need a bit of both, actually.
Interesting.
Yeah, I do think that's really interesting. I mean, I'll say this, like mentioned at the top of the pod, like I kind of go in and out of my engagement with politics, and this is a fairly more abstract point, but I've always thought mandatory service of some kind was a good idea. Now, I didn't join the military. I haven't put my money where my mouth is with that, but it doesn't even have to be military. I think in Switzerland, for example, it has mandatory military service, but you can also like just kind of work for the state in some capacity if you're a pacifist or
You could
something,
be
or if
like
you just moved out.
planting trees.
I do think having that be part of like young adults' lives would be good in the United States. And I think maybe that could continue into adulthood too, because as discussed, maybe that's the real issue. But I agree with Adam's point that the mandatory nature of these things is what really makes them work, and what makes it can lead to great romances and great friendships just to be in that situation together. I find it's very romantic. Whether we out of a literal erotic sense of like it's a great way to meet women, but also like it leads to a more romanticized friendship, I think, too, when you've been through something together. Not that, you know,
Yes,
listen,
and it
we've all
almost
met in a much more voluntary way, and that's been great too, right? But yeah, there is something about that collective engagement.
well, because it almost mirrors the burden of life. It mirrors the burden of being born, which is that you do not choose to go to school. You don't choose to go to the national service. You find yourself in it. You don't choose to be born. You are just born. And that is what makes the bonds in life so powerful. It is the same thing that makes the bonds potentially so powerful in this program, which Robert will instill when he wins the governorship.
Yeah. That will be an interesting day.
Robert, may I
No,
ask
and I
you a
think,
question?
yeah.
Sure.
Well, reading through your book, it feels as though, strangely, we are dealing with very similar themes, you and I, in our fictional
Well, it
work.
does take place, so the character in my book, Max, it takes place after he just graduated from high school, and it's summer and he doesn't quite know what to do with his life. But he ends up having this adventure of a lifetime.
Well, and part of it, Robert, seems to be
Well, just can you tell me how much, just curious, like how much did you read?
I made it through many of the sections you told me to focus on. I made it through those
Okay.
sections. And what I wish to ask you is a question I was asked very often in the interviews I did on Mixtape, which is, what is your relationship to nostalgia? What do you think about nostalgia? maybe perhaps as it relates to California or to life in general.
Yeah,
What are
like
your thoughts on
it's
this?
nostalgia, but it's sort of nostalgia of an idealized memory. So I say like the Portuguese term like saudade, it's nostalgia of what could have been, and that's a huge theme in the book. And this character, Roger Blackstone, comes in and he's this presidential candidate, but he's also like it's like using aesthetics as alchemy and how that relates to nostalgia and saudade. And then like Hyperborea is this like in your book, so Hyperborea is this like mystical, the kind of the mystical place you dream of. And that has like parallels to like the vapor in my novel.
Definitely, I think these are similarities. Well, what do you think of so for example, in me and Matthew's discussion on New Right, we spoke of an idea that maybe nostalgia, which is currently sort of in vogue to criticize as a maybe a weak or pathetic or somewhat,
Well,
I don't know,
okay, so I
indulgent
get that
impulse.
because.
Maybe it speaks to something eternal, some yearning for eternal truths,
That
eternal
that's what it
concepts.
is, because it's
Yes.
not, people overly idealize the past, so people say, oh, maybe the past wasn't so great, why you should be nostalgicizing it, but it's nostalgia for nostalgia, which should be embraced. It's like you're the dreams you had in youth that maybe they never metabolize. But yeah, like that, they should, but you should revive those dreams. You should, I don't know, like what to do. I don't tell people like what to do with those dreams, but they should be thinking about them and like writing them down and hopefully get something really creative out of that. And I mean, my book kind of takes that to an extreme where like aesthetics become like a form of alchemy. And it also gets pretty trippy. It's a travelogue of California, but it's also a surreal dark comedy. But it is very much like I don't even come to think of it, I don't even say the word alchemy, but it is really a book about alchemy. I do think, but the character in my book, he's still very young. Like he's 18 and he just graduated from high school, and I think he's entering adulthood and he understands that the adult world is harsher, and I think, but I think he's like, he has this fear where he realizes that he's still young, he's still a dreamer, but maybe the dreams of his youth will never come into fruition.
Yeah, I think
He
that
fears of
awareness
missing
is
out on
dawning on
that.
him.
And then,
And I feel
but
like,
then what ends up
yeah, sorry, go on.
happening is like those dreams become hyper, they end up becoming hyper real and almost like in this like Hollywood production in surreal, like psychedelic trips and in like Roger Blackstone's aesthetic production, but then he gets like blackmailed to be in this weird like Hollywood TV show. And then also the other angle is like, Adam, what did you think about also like how I think sexuality is also, there's also an angle of like alchemy or even spiritual alchemy to sexuality as well.
Yes. Interesting concept. I must go back to the shrooms. I must talk about part
Yeah.
of what I experienced on the mushrooms. Part of what I experienced was the idea, very much along the lines, the Poglian lines, right, of Apollonian and Dionysian, masculine, feminine, the idea that there's maybe a creative architecting, if you will, force,
Yeah.
okay, that designs and inseminates and creates. And then there is a birthing receptive force that receives and nurtures and eventually, also creates with, by harnessing the blueprint, it creates organically, right? I was seeing this relationship very vividly as I was looking up to the sky. I was seeing, okay, all the plants are reaching up. They're all reaching up saying, give me something, give me light, give me synthesis. And the universe was reaching down. Okay, it was saying, here is light, here is power, here is organic mass, take it, receive it. And even thoughts, even communication, even as I was thinking of you two and the trip and the weekend and everything, even a thought seemed, and I tried to explain this to Matthew, perhaps poorly over Filiberto's burritos at like 2 in the morning. Maybe even thinking is an almost sexual act where you wrap where you wrap around something abstractly, your attention. You take your attention, you wrap it around it. And your attention is Apollonian and masculine in this way that your thoughts are like statements and ideas and concepts. You're taking something which is just a being, okay, which is just a earthly, maybe fixed thing, and you're wrapping around your informational energy around it. Perhaps this sounds ridiculous. I could feel it intensely during this second night on the mushrooms.
No, I totally get what you're saying.
Yeah, so that is essentially a sexual spirituality. That is the idea that maybe, everything in the universe is interacting in a way that is in sync with the patterns of sexuality, even if it does not seem overtly sexual.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. It's kind of a theme, somewhat satirized, but nevertheless a sincere theme in Dragon Day as well. Where the
Absolutely.
professor kind of thinks, teaches a kind of literary theory involving
Phallology?
penetration. Yeah, phallology is what it's called in the book. Penetration as kind of the fundamental principle of reality is everything penetrating other things, which is a bit reductive and very, very phallic in its presentation. There is more to mere penetration and the mere phallic paradigm, in my opinion, but it's definitely an important part of the functioning of nature, and you can see it on something like a psychedelic drug in terms of, witnessing nature, but even thinking about thinking as you were doing. It's definitely pretty uniquely there. And just kind of a general comment on the foregoing here, Adam, you were asking me my thoughts on nostalgia, and I kind of was trying to think of something clever to say, but basically, I find it interesting the way all of these concepts, sexuality, psychedelia, alchemy, and nostalgia, I think there's a lot of fertile connection between all of them. And I'm glad the shrooms came back up because when you were asking me if I'd had any recent thoughts on this nostalgic topic, and maybe we've already talked about this, but I'll pose it as a question to you, Adam. What do you think the relation between nostalgia and psychedelics and specifically mushrooms is, if anything? For me, I'll say this, especially the first day we did them, I found the feeling to be very nostalgic. Robert, you kind of mentioned it felt almost like a child, or maybe you didn't even say this, but you said it felt like a movie sequence, another word you hear a lot of
Well,
people
I
describing
got,
their experiences
yeah,
as.
like a movie sequence. It gives
Well,
meaning to
and
the
I
sequence.
strongly felt like it was like a memory from childhood or something. And
Right.
not only childhood, but I was born in the 90s, so I don't even remember this, but it felt very 60s. That's a little bit my own
Well,
mindset coming through.
I guess that's kind of a cliche, but
It is a cliche, and we were,
But
but
it
now,
is
but
real.
I,
Yes.
yeah, that's
But it
true
was
too.
real, right? And I was playing Grateful Dead. I was playing American Beauty, which, yes, it's a cliche, but it's what kind of came to me to put on. And I really felt that, and we were sitting in this creek, which is a very timeless kind of thing to do, and it just felt like it spanned. If you guys have ever seen, what's it called? This is a random reference. Buffalo 66 or whatever it's called, the Vincent Gallo movie, and he's in the he's in the he's, have you seen it, Adam? I don't know if
Yes,
you
I
have.
have.
Yeah,
Excellent
you know when
film.
he's in with Christina Ricci, he's in the photo booth, and he's like, look like together and we're spanning time. Like we're span he just keeps saying, like, we've got to span. I don't really know what he means by that. It's definitely
Yes,
pretty
Matthew. Yes, Matthew.
pretty
Yeah,
pretty
sorry.
loose connection to what I'm saying. It just came to mind. It's like, yeah, I felt like I was spanning time. Whatever that
I
fucking
must
means, I felt like
interject.
I was doing it.
I
Yeah,
must
yes.
interject. I think Matthew's onto something here. I feel that nostalgia is a good thing. It is maybe just the residue of a well-lived life. If you live your life
Yeah.
well with good memories and actions
I
and
think it's
friendships
both.
and
I think if you live a good life, you have that kind of nostalgia. And then there's also nostalgia for what could have been for people who have a lot of regrets. And I think
yes,
it's healthy to have some
Stark, but this
combination. But
is
the thing is that those two, they're not two different things. They actually do overlap. The thing is they can overlap a lot.
well, this I feel Stark is Matthew's revelation, perhaps, is that the spanning of time, right? This distance nostalgia has from the actual incident. Okay. So I often have the feeling with something that I'm doing something, yes, to have fun in the moment, but I'm also doing it to acquire the memory of it to enjoy later. Right. But
Yeah.
Matthew's
And
describing that some aspect of the shrooms was that he was in the moment while also experiencing the sort of afterlife of it, the nostalgic afterlife of it. He was spanning some sort of that distance, that time distance was refined.
Like nostalgia can come back through like sense. Sense can bring back nostalgia, but it really, so like there was a book at that Sedona bookstore by Colin Wilson, and Colin Wilson's entire like philosophy is he's kind of a mystic, but it's really about consciousness, like having that peak experience. So like how to live a full life, like how to have these experiences of full intensity, and they come from, and I think nostalgia is recapping those experiences in life where you do have this strong sense of intensity of experience and intensity of emotion. And I guess like this whole kind of like more philosophy that I come up with is like how to take that nostalgia. And it's what my kind of my book is about, is like how to kind of implement it into fruition, into the physical world, to alchemize it into the physical world. And so for someone who is very creative, but also has a lot of resources.
Absolutely.
The process of bringing these things you're nostalgic for into the world, you're saying, Robert?
Yeah, to make them real. And bring them.
Yeah, I mean, this is where it gets dicey. Like, what nostalgia kind of should be left as nostalgia? What nostalgia is actually a vision for the future? How much does this, I'm sorry to wax so abstract here, and I don't know if this will actually lead to fruitful discussion, but it's like, how much does nostalgia actually have to do with the thing that you think you're remembering, and how much of it is actually, how much of it actually has to do with very much with the present, you know, and what you want out of the present, or what you feel you're missing? Because I feel like some things I'm nostalgic for.
I think that's absolutely the case.
Yes.
And another thing about like my philosophy is to sort of instead of where there's just a subconscious undertow, and to really like realize that as the truth, and then just to totally embrace it. That's like the essence of my philosophy. Instead of having that under the surface where you think you're nostalgic about the past, like to figure out what you most desire,
seize the nostalgia,
and seize it and alchemize it.
Stark, I could not agree with you more. Yeah, sorry, Matthew, continue.
No, I think I pretty much said my piece. We're talking about fairly abstract concepts here, but it's interesting. I guess I was going to ask more of a question for you, Adam, and Robert, if you have thoughts, chime in. Just in terms of that relationship, potential relationship between nostalgia and psychedelics. This didn't necessarily happen to me, although maybe a tiny bit. They are sometimes known to bring back like long lost memories. Do you guys think that's just, you know, classic psychology, you know, do something funny to your brain and old things are going to come back up, or is there a deeper relationship there? Like, I don't know. I don't even know what I'm trying to ask. It's a very, very, very
Matthew,
tricky kind of question, but yeah, go on.
I know exactly what you're trying to ask. And I think this is another key thing, not so much this experience, which is interesting. Different experiences perhaps locate you in different realms of what this substance can do for you. But in about a year ago, also in Sedona, with some other friends, I experienced very strong feelings. And again, I'm saying feelings. It sort of doesn't really. Again, I can try to communicate this. I'm using words. I'm doing my best here. But I experienced very strong sensations, notions, awarenesses of my bloodline, of my ancestry.
Yeah.
I was intensely, intensely aware of the procreative process that had led to me. What the fuck is going on? Sorry. Did you guys hear a weird beeping?
Oh, yeah, I heard it. But that makes me think of like Jung and the collective conscious.
Yes, it was like I was witnessing the tree in my head. Like I was witnessing the lines, how far back they go, and all the different, you know, pairings. And Matthew, you said something I think remarkable, which is that you are a result, your physical being is the result of basically infinite variations of people falling in love. Okay.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So this was,
in love. Yeah.
It's amazing, right? Like, I said this on the last night, I think in response to you saying something similar. This was something a yoga teacher said to me, and people can laugh as much as they want. Yes, it was a gay yoga teacher. And yes, I was in the class. But he said this and it blew my mind. And it's the kind of thing you could imagine like a Karen having on her, like a little poster on her kitchen wall, you are the product of thousands of faces that fell in love. But it's also true in this crazily deep scientific way, that does kind of blow your mind. And listen, we talked about the brutality of nature earlier. Realistically, are there a few rapes in there? Perhaps. Are there a few, marriages of necessity, whatever? Yes, but there's also, this pro regardless, it doesn't always have to be idealized love. You are the product of this insanely, profound attraction people end up having to one another. And it's not just your parents and your grandparents and their parents and grandparents. It goes back to the dawn of time. And there is something extremely profound about that. Just it gives you a sense of the time span of it is nuts, and also the role of these intense emotions in our creation, and these things that come to reflect in every inch of your own face when you look at it in the mirror, are the product of these things. And it's the type of thing that one should remind themselves, if you're ever feeling jaded about life, or burnt out, or demystified, or unenchanted. One shortcut to being reenchanted, we talked about obviously with shrooms, but even just little facts like this kind of reenchant everything I find.
Beautifully said.
I guess, yeah, to close my thought on the nostalgia psychedelics thing, I obviously don't have my thoughts fully laid out. But I, you listen, again, kind of going back to the is it God or is it science question, and this desire to bring religion and science together and really think through, the most sort of cutting edge scientific, from multiple different perspectives, take on like what God is and what spirituality is and can be moving forward. The nostalgia that may be induced by drugs or enhanced by drugs, or even without drugs involved, I do think nostalgia taps into something eternal, into a higher realm. I think it's one of our gateways to it. And if and when drugs are kind of part of that, think what you will about drugs, I think that it kind of proves that these elements of nostalgia are not just, wishing you were in some other time, but rather that these things linger in a concrete way, and that we can access them, in usually in different states of mind. This is where maybe we get really trippy, and maybe it's not something that I have the knowledge to really speak on, but I've been getting more interested in ideas like astral projection and meditation, and access that, taking seriously the notion that the different sort of states of consciousness you can explore with and without drugs, whether through meditation, drugs, even just hypnagogia and being tired. That these dimensions have a reality to them, and I think nostalgia taps into that as almost like this residue, like that maybe has a more physical existence than we realize, what it feels like sometimes.
Yeah, I
It's kind of
can't
far down
help
the rabbit hole, but yeah.
but feel we are locate we are using a word, the N-word, nostalgia, if you will. And we're using the N-word to describe something that maybe is bigger than it. Maybe the word is full of these like connotations and sort of associations that do a disservice to the bigger, the grander thing that we're all getting at here. It is a limitation of
I
language.
think so. I've always said this, Robert, we've talked about it. I've always thought nostalgia has something very, very, it's very closely related to to divinity in my head. And it's a hard thing to describe.
Well, I
It's
agree.
not
What is that
the
Excurious
80s were
quote?
divine.
Do you remember what that Excurious quote was that I actually sort of use a version of him, like the very end of my book?
It was a Azurius musician, fast wave musician from 2017, 2018 era, said something about nostalgia being a longing for the divine. He himself
Or did he say
even
nostalgia or
inspired.
aesthetics? I forget.
I think he was specifically talking about nostalgia, and what he was saying was he is not. His
Right.
stuff is very 80s inflected, as a lot of your nostalgia, Robert, is also 80s inflected. And his point was, it's not that the 80s were so great. It's just that there's something you can see in the rear view that you
So, but
can't
it
see while it's
wasn't, yeah,
happening.
like 80s nostalgia, like with the whole retrowave genre, I don't think it was the about the 80s themselves. I think it's about the dreams that people had in the 80s, not about the
I think
80s
it's about the
itself.
dreams, and I think it is about the dreams. I think it's about, you know, the features that could have been, but I also just think it's literally.
But
Listen,
especially
I
for
think this is
younger
a mixtape.
people
Hold
who
on.
don't
Yeah,
remember
go
it
on.
that well, I think.
Yeah, oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm 80s nostalgia, and I was not alive at all in the 80s. But Adam, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's a mixtape, right? Where it's like even the worst parts of your life to look back on with some fondness. That's a mixtape, right? I'm not
Yeah, and
bastardizing
I
that.
feel
Yeah.
that very strongly, which enhances our point, which is that even
Right.
in some weird way, even the horrible experiences, the horrible periods, right? You will think of periods in your life, post breakup, post whatever, jobless periods, whatever it is, they gain something
Glow.
in retrospect. Yeah, they gain some kind of meaning, some beauty in retrospect,
It's like
even if our, yeah.
you can see where God was with you the whole time is one way of putting
Yes.
it. Which can I don't know why. It's just like we for some it's like, I don't know. It's, hopefully the listeners are interested in this, because I know I keep just kind of saying loosely abstract guy who does drugs kind of thing. But like it's almost like what was I gonna say? Like maybe we can't have that level of bliss in the moment, because then we would never do anything. But as soon as the thing has been completed, the more divine nature of it is there and visible. Does that make any sense? I don't know. It's like, I guess
That
you
makes
can't
perfect
have that.
sense. Yeah. And if that is true, then it would mean that the more time we spend in states of nostalgia, in states of recalled nostalgia, even in these terrible periods, would give us greater and greater clues into how to notice them in the moment when they come upon us again, so that
Yeah,
we
I
can
think so.
seize them up in the future more awarely.
Right, and I feel like that is so integral to the project of Mixtape Hyperborea. You know, and you have the notable last line about what fireworks, smoke drifting into the sky, right? Am I, or
Yes, the fire hydrant
was it a
smoke, yeah.
sprinkler? No, it's yeah. Kind of like a tears and rain sort of moment, and I feel like that's like a reminder to the reader and to yourself writing it, perhaps, you know, to treasure these things while they're there, because they do disappear.
And I must reveal, this was a real thing. So this was a real thing that there was at one point a stolen fire hydrant. It was at one point blasted out of the car window. And it stuck with me very long. And so can you know what I mean? It's like to return to
Yeah.
this theme of
Wait
sort
a minute.
of
You mean a fire
organic
extinguish? Was it a
synchronicity.
fire extinguisher, or you actually removed an
It was an
actual
extinguisher,
fire?
right?
Not
It was
a,
an
okay.
extinguisher. I
Yeah,
have
that's what I was
learned
saying.
since, this is a federal crime. So in fact, I recant my comment. This is purely fictional, based on nothing.
Yeah, no, it's there.
We're at the end of the show. Adam Luz, thank you so much for being on. It's been a great show, and also Matt Pegas. And
Of
also
course.
check out Adam's book, Mixtape Hyperborea.
To be on today with my friend Las Vegas and Robert Stark, the Stark Architect, the Stark Angel, Andrei Starkovsky, Charles Starkly, Joan of Stark, the Stark de Triomphe. Matt, am I forgetting any?
Raiders of the Lost Stark.
Raiders of
Maybe
the
a new
Lost
one.
Stark.
Yeah.
Absolutely. What an honor. Thank you for having me.
Yeah.
Thank you. It's been a great show.